Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. During my meditation, my breath becomes more still, and suddenly it seems to stop. I have experienced this many times, but I can't avoid feeling scared. What should I do? When I first started meditating, I remember going to Pujya Swamiji, my guru, and saying something very similar to that, actually. Because while there's so many different paths and techniques of meditation, of course, and I always hesitate a little bit to make any general statements because there's so many different techniques, and there really isn't anything that's more right or wrong or better or worse. Meditation is really a vehicle to get us across, from the ordinary consciousness in which we live most of the time, where we identify just as the body and our whole life is just this material existence, and how much pleasure can I get, and how much pain can I avoid, and how many nice things can I grab and grasp and accumulate, and how much can I avoid losing my nice things. You know, that's the way that most of us live. And so meditation takes us from that into the truth of who we really are, an experience of the self. And there's an infinite number of ways to get there. That being said, the question is about a very specific piece, so I'll share about it. But if this doesn't happen to you in your meditation, don't worry. If your meditation experience is something completely different, but it's taking you into the truth of who you are, and it's connecting you to God and to yourself and to the universe, then it's right. But in this case, I also practice a meditation that involves the breath. And when I first started practicing, what I would find is that in the beginning, I was aware of my breath, I was watching my breath, I was working with my breath. But then, after a few minutes, it would seem like my breath was stopping, like the person who's asked this question. And I would always stop the meditation at that point, or, you know, bring my awareness back to the breath. Because the time that it seemed to stop was just when I would hit a place in my meditation where everything was so still. There was a moment where I was watching my breath, chanting my mantra, and then the mantra would start chanting itself. I no longer had to do anything. And the breath seemed to just stop. And it would scare me too. And I would always then kind of shake myself out of it and come back to the awareness of the breath. And I finally went to Pooja Swamiji and said, I'm really afraid I'm going to die. And he assured me, I tell the story because with the same assurance that he gave me, I'm going to give whoever asked the question, which is, you will not die. Your breath won't stop. People don't die in meditation. Unwittingly, unwillingly, just because their breath happened to stop. But there is sometimes a very real experience of feeling like the breath will stop. But don't worry, it's not actually going to stop. The body has got an incredible survival mechanism built into it that will ensure that you breathe. So if you reach a point of such stillness that it seems like the breath is stopping, don't worry. There's no need to do what I had done at the beginning of shake yourself out of it and come back. Stay with it. You won't die. Your ego may die. Your identity may die. How you know of yourself may die. And so a lot of times, actually, in meditation, the feeling of the breath stopping is one thing, but there's a lot of things that come up during meditation that try to pull us back out of it. Different fearful things, different experiences that lead us to want to come out. And this is really the ego being afraid of its own death. It's not the body that's going to die. It's that as we lose that sense of this is me, and we actually start to experience more, this is me, or I am that, there's a death of the ego that has built itself upon this is me. And in its last ditch attempt to hold on to us, the ego tries to scare us out of meditation. So don't worry. It's actually a good sign. It means you're getting somewhere. It means you're getting somewhere enough that you're scaring your own ego. And so keep going. Stay with the meditation. The worst that will die, or the best that will die, is the ego. Don't worry about the body day.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. The place where our spiritual practice, our spiritual life ends, and our family life or our social life or even our work life begins, that place that feels to many of us like a very thick line. Here's my needs over here. Here's my happiness over here. Here's your needs over there. And they're different. They're separate. Like, here's my spiritual path, there's my family. Here's my spiritual path, there's my work. The dilemma with these lines is they keep our life fragmented. And so the goal really is, how can I live in such a way, not that I become subservient to someone else's needs, not that I give up myself or my needs for someone, but that I re-understand what I need. So, for example, if I look on a spiritual level, what I need is to be able to practice seeing the divine wherever I look. It's a huge spiritual challenge, but it's one of the most important aspects of a spiritual path, is the divine that we worship in our temples, in our mosques, in our gurdwaras, in our churches, in our synagogues, that divine lives in creation. The divine, the creator, has created the creation. In the Hindu tradition, we've got very, very specific teachings and tenets and mantras that remind us that the creation is divine. And that our challenge is to open this third eye that actually can see the divinity in all. So my two eyes, for example, when I look at you, see young, beautiful woman. Okay. Well, that's true. That's the form. That's the vehicle you're in. But the truth of who you are is divinity, consciousness, essence, love, energy, soul. So my highest need is to be able to practice that wherever I go. Another one of my highest needs is to figure out how to use my body, my time, in a way that A, benefits others, and B, enables me to bend my ego so that I can have deeper and deeper and more real spiritual experiences. The ego is the greatest barrier to my spiritual experience. And the ego is the one that says, I, mine, me, what about me, what about me, what about me? That's not how I want it. That's not what I want. You know, that's the ego. And so it's a very interesting and delicate balance, because what the ego says is, here's the things I need. Here's the way I like it. There's what you need. We're going to do a balance. I'm going to sometimes do what I want, I'll sometimes do what you want. And while that may work for a superficial level, just relationship of making sure that we get along, it's not going to take me deeper spiritually. Because what I'm allowing myself to do is to keep thinking that what I need is to fulfill the desires that I have, which are different than the desires that you have. So I like pizza, you like Chinese food. So half the time we go for pizza, half the time we go for Chinese food. Okay, everybody's mostly happy. Or at least happy 50% of the time. But that's not the highest goal. My highest goal is not about how much pizza can I eat or how much Chinese food can I eat. It's about how can I experience the truth of who I am in every moment, whether I'm eating pizza, whether I'm eating Chinese food, whether I'm fasting, whether I'm eating Mexican or Indian, it's irrelevant. Those preferences are preferences of my taste buds. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying thou shalt eat food that you hate or not eat food that you like. But when we're thinking about our lives and our priorities and balance in our life, we need to look deeper than balancing that which tickles my taste buds, literally, or that which feels good to my ego, or that which, you know. What I really need is actually that which comes from within me. Because it's not so much what I'm doing as how I'm doing it. Wherever I am, I can see the divine in all, or I can practice seeing the divine in all. And that's my task. And so when you talk about balancing your needs and the needs of others, look really carefully at what your needs are and what other people are asking of you. And so, for example, if we're talking about pizza and Chinese food, well, okay, is it really worth the conflict? Because, of course, being in peace is a much higher need and a much deeper value than getting the food I like to eat. You may get the food you want, but if you're not in peace, you're not going to be able to digest it anyway. If you have to fight to go to the restaurant you want, your body's not going to digest it anyway. If you've got to fight to go to the movie that you wanted to see, you're not going to enjoy it anyway. You're going to be sitting there knowing that, you know, the minute this movie is over, you're going to be back in conflict. You're not going to be able to hold hands, and, you know, because you've had a fight. You've had to, like, push somebody into doing this. So being in peace is a much higher need than what most of us think of as our needs. The real needs that we have, when you talk about really balancing, the real needs that you have are needs to be able to do a spiritual practice that enables you to stay grounded and anchored, to be able to move through the world in the way that is in the best for your spiritual growth, meaning to focus on seeing the divine in people, to focus on using your time and your ability to serve. And if what you've got is people trying to pull you out of that, that's where you have to start looking at having conversations about that. That's the stuff that I would say start to look at. But I think what you'll be able to find is that with a shift in focus, if you feel like you're the one giving in, you're the one, you know, who always is giving in to other people's needs, that's going to make you feel badly inside. But without changing what you do, if you simply shift how you think about it, and what you think about it is that all of these times are more and more opportunities for you to actually focus spiritually. So, for example, dinner's over. You're the one who gets stuck washing the dishes every night. Okay, maybe it's a family of six people and really everyone should take a day of the week. Like, if we were just going to divvy up duties, that would be the fair way to do it. Nonetheless, you find yourself getting stuck every night. Well, there's two options. Option one is you fight about it, at which point you may get somebody else to do the dishes. But are you really going to enjoy those 10 or 15 minutes that you have of not doing the dishes, given the conflict that has just been created in your house over the fight about it? Or can you take those 10 or 15 minutes of doing the dishes every night and consider them part of your spiritual practice? And as you're doing them, instead of thinking, oh my God, I can't believe this, how did I get stuck in this stupid family, and why doesn't anybody care about me, and why doesn't anybody respect me, and why is it always me? Instead of that, can you marvel at the beautiful way that warm, soapy water feels, and how amazingly lucky we are to be in a place where, look, you turn on the tap and water comes right out? And how many women in other parts of the world are walking miles to a well or to a hand pump or have to ration the water that they're cleaning dishes with from the water that they used to bathe in or the water that they used to drink? Can you use those 10 or 15 minutes rather than sulking and feeling like, oh my God, you know. And what else? I mean, it's only a few minutes. Maybe you would have seen a little bit of a TV serial, you would have talked to somebody on the phone, you would have gone on Facebook, you would have, I mean, really, would you have made such incredible use of those 10 or 15 minutes that it's worth conflict every night? Take the dishes as a spiritual practice. It's your meditation of warm sudsy water, right? We have a meditation of a mantra. We have a meditation of our image of the divine. And I also have a meditation of warm sudsy water. We have a beautiful example in our scriptures of a woman named Shabri, who was a poor village woman who was so devoted to God that literally, one day he showed up on her doorstep. But she had spent her life sweeping, just sweeping, waiting for him to come. Her sweeping was her meditation. So rather than thinking, oh my God, you know, why am I so poor and why can't I have a maid? You know, all those other people have maids. Really, I shouldn't be the one who has to sweep. Or I've been sweeping every day, somebody else should come and sweep, because if God is coming, he's, you know, come into the neighborhood, other houses should also help out. No. She swept and sang and swept and sang and swept and sang that Lord Ram's going to come, God's going to come. So whatever we do, that can become your meditation. And so I would suggest in general, how much you can see things that you have to do in life as a way of making them part of your spiritual path. Now, obviously, that doesn't include things that harm you. It doesn't include things that are against your value system. It just includes the little stuff that all of our lives are made of, that being in relationship, being in family, being in a workplace, being in a community. Everybody always feels like, oh, why do I have to do this? Why don't other people? Why me? This is universal. But if you can take those and instead of seeing them as drudgery, see them as yet another opportunity for spiritual practice, and maybe sometimes it's spiritual practice with a broom, and sometimes it's spiritual practice in warm, sudsy water, and sometimes it's spiritual practice over cooking, and whatever it may be. How can I make that, instead of something that keeps me from what I need, how can I find what I need through doing that? And lastly, we ensure that in our relationships, the things that really do matter to us, once we've pulled apart the stuff that really doesn't matter, But the things that really do matter to us, whether it's our spiritual practice, whether it's a creative outlet, whether it's time with other loved ones, that we have time for that. And that we make time for that. But that's gonna balance in different ways in different situations. But that's absolutely something that you will find the way to get that balance. And what you'll find also is it's a lot less time than you thought you needed. If you can take the other things and allow them to just be part of your spiritual practice on earth, part of your practice with your eyes open, moving, you know, yoga in action, meditation in action. And yeah, sometimes it involves doing things that we wouldn't ordinarily do for others. But that service itself is a very, very beautiful element of spiritual practice. Seva. That's what seva is, karma yoga. Doesn't just mean, you know, Saturday mornings at the battered women's shelter. It's anything that we are doing that's in service of someone, something outside of ourself. And yeah, Saturday mornings at a battered women's shelter is a fantastic thing to do. But it's not the only thing you can do. And a lot of times the people who need things from us, maybe people in our family, they may be people in our community, they may be people in our workplace, people in our friend circle. And through that karma yoga, through that seva, that service outside of myself, I actually attain a very, very deep and beautiful spiritual experience. Because it enables you to connect with the other person in a completely different and beautiful way. Instead of thinking about doing it for them, as you're doing it, realize that you are them, that you're one, that it's not me doing this for you, but it's me seeing myself in you. So then it becomes an even deeper spiritual practice.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. The bottom line of overcoming fear is to have faith, right? The opposite of fear is faith. If I've got faith, I will not fear. When children are in their mother's arms, they're not afraid. Doesn't matter what's going on. There's a beautiful story that Pooja Swamiji loves to tell of a young boy on a boat, and the boat is capsizing, and everybody is rushing to get into lifeboats, and, you know, there's this young boy just sitting there very calmly, and someone says to him, "Aren't you afraid? This boat is sinking. Like, you don't know how to swim. We're all going to drown." And the boy says, "Oh, well, see, that's my mom over there. And mom will take care of me." And just that beautiful faith is the answer to fear. However, that's a broader answer. Meaning, in a general way, we need to bring more faith into our life. The more faith that you can bring in your life, the less you will fear. Wherever you fear, it's a symbol to you, a signal to you, there's some lack in my faith in this place. Otherwise, I wouldn't fear. And so what I do on a really, really practical level, I come from a background, a family background, a societal background that's very rooted in anxiety. It's just very, very, very anxiety prone, much more anxiety prone than an Indian spiritual community. And so I was brought up really with the sort of everything's an emergency experience, which obviously leads to a lot of anxiety. And what I have found on a personal level, because I decided at a very young age, I can't live like this. Long before I had come to India, long before I had come on a spiritual path, I knew there is no way I can live with this level of anxiety. And as I've come onto a spiritual path, it's bolstered this. And for me, what my practice is whatever I'm worried about in that moment, I say to myself, what is the worst that can happen? So let's say, for example, we are driving to the airport and we get stuck in a traffic jam. Okay. Now I've calculated how long it's going to take us to get to the airport, but I hadn't calculated for that much traffic. So now you're stuck in traffic and you are nervous. You're going to miss the flight. So I say to myself, in a case like that, what is the worst that happens? Worst that happens is you miss the flight. Okay, and then I accept it. I say, fine, forget it. Assume in your mind you've already missed the flight. Don't try to tell yourself, no, 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 it's okay, you'll make it. God will take care of you, because God is not worried about whether you miss your flight or not. I mean, really, we do things, oh, God, have mercy, I shouldn't miss the flight. Like, really, God is so worried about if you miss your flight or not? This is not the stuff that mercy and grace is about. Mercy and grace is about our awakening, our connection with God, our connection with the truth, our connection with the light. Mercy and grace does not bother itself with whether we miss a flight or not. Because if we do, then clearly we were supposed to miss it, because whatever we're supposed to learn is going to come through missing the flight. So in my mind, I say, okay, fine, you've missed it. Just assume you've missed the flight. Then I say, okay, what's the worst now that happens? Well, you missed the event then. You were supposed to go. You were going to speak at an event. You had cut it very close. If you miss that flight, you will miss the event. Okay, you've missed the event. Then what's the worst that happens? They all hate you. The organizers hate you. The audience hates you. Everybody who was counting on you to be there hates you. Now again, of course, you could do the opposite. You could come in and say, oh, of course, they're not going to hate you. Everybody understands. But I have found on a personal level that really what works best is assuming the worst. Because here's where you go from there. What you find is, if you allow yourself to take that every and then to its absolute worst case scenario, you know where they all end up? every one of your fears, every one of your anxieties, every one of your worst case scenarios ends up in one place. You know where that place is? Then you die. Take any fear you have, and it will become then you die. Or then a loved one will die. And either the fear is that the loved one should not die, or the fear is if the loved one dies, I will be alone. But death is always the bottom line of every fear. You're afraid you're going to lose your job? Okay, well, why? Well, because then I won't have any money. Okay, then? So then you're homeless. Okay, then? I will get murdered. Then you die. Right? I mean, take anything you're afraid of. Allow yourself, at least in your own mind, to follow it to its most fearful outcome. And I guarantee you every one of them will be, then you die. Whether you die because you were murdered or you die because everybody hates you and you're so humiliated that you just disintegrate. Whether you die of hunger or you whatever it is, all of our fears end up with, then you die. And you know what? You're going to die. And so living with the awareness that I'm going to die, ironically, is actually what I have found on a very practical level, the best antidote to anxiety. Because everything that I'm nervous about ends up with then I die. Which means that on some level, I'm living in an illusion that if I can prevent this thing from happening, I'm not going to die. Well, I am going to die. If not today, if not tomorrow, if not the day after, someday. Someday, one of those things I'm worried about is going to end in me dying. So I might as well learn to accept my own imminent death as quickly as I possibly can. Dealing with that is the key to overcoming anxiety, I have found. Because once you are no longer afraid of death, really deeply not afraid of it, not the, well, I'm done anyway, life is hopeless, and, you know, so I might as well die. Not that. But really, really the awareness of I am soul. The lack of fear of death that comes from knowing who I really am isn't in this body. Who I really am has had a body before, will have a different body after. This body's going to go. Once you really have that awareness, then there's nothing else left that can scare you. Because loss of money, loss of prestige, loss of love, the thing that makes all of those so scary is the pain that we feel, the sense of loss of self that we feel. It literally feels like I will die. Well, if you already know you're going to die, and you're already okay with that, because you know that you're not that which dies, well, so you're also obviously not your reputation. You're not what people think about you. Okay, you didn't make the function. They all hate you. The entire city of Delhi hates you because you didn't make the function, right? I mean, why only limit it to the couple hundred people in your event? Go all out. Everybody, forget, the whole world hates you. Okay, then what? Then you're alone. Right? Everybody hates you. Then you are alone. Well, you know what? We're alone anyway. Whether people love us or people hate us, ultimately we are alone. We come into the world alone, we go out alone. And ultimately, the relationship, the connection that is the one that keeps us from the deepest experience of aloneness. Because you can surround yourself with people. But at the end of the day, you're alone. Even if there's five people in your bed. Deeply internally, you are alone. But you are there. You are there. And that you which is there is whole and full and divine. This is why on spiritual practices, spiritual paths, there's such an emphasis, even if it's just temporary, on silence, on solitude. Because, yeah, it's not fun to be alone, really alone. But what it does is it forces you into an experience of, okay, there's no one else around, have to look within. Who is that one within? How can I make that relationship? And so allow yourself in your own mind to just follow your fears to their absolute worst case scenario, and then it's going to take you to know exactly what you need to work on in life. Is it fear of being alone? Of ego death? Is it fear of physical death? Is it fear of losing your loved ones? Whatever your worst case scenario that all of your fears take you to, that's the place that you need to work. Don't try to deal with the individual fears. Deal with the base of them. And then the individual ones will dissipate on their own.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin, with people for the ethical treatment of animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. So the choice not to have a partner, meaning a romantic partner, meaning the choice not to get married. We were speaking the other night about choosing the right person to marry, and here we are talking about love. So the choice not to have a partner, well, obviously it's fine. The reason that most people, well, there's a lot of reasons, but the core reasons that most people couple off is A, because it's just so standard that it's just sort of what people do without even thinking about it. Most people just find a partner or their parents find a partner for them or however it works. But the idea of not getting married is something that for many, many people, it doesn't even occur to them because it's just what people do. And especially in a country and culture like India, where, you know, every time young girls and boys are at any sort of occasion, the first question they get asked is, so when are you getting married? This is like all that gets talked about. And the parents, of course, are under a lot of pressure. So there's this incredible just sort of a wheel of life that goes that very few of them ever even think about getting off or not getting on. Another reason that people do it, of course, is the deep desire to have someone to share their lives with. One person exclusively. To have one person who's special from out of the rest with whom they can share their lives. And the truth is that connection, deep connection, is crucial. We are wired on every level for deep connection. When children, as very young children, don't get enough deep connection from their parents, they literally don't grow. You can feed them, you can house them, you can give them vaccinations, you can give them warm clothes, you can give them everything. But if there isn't enough skin-to-skin time, if there's not enough eye contact, these kids don't grow. So we are literally wired for contact and connection. But it doesn't have to be romantic. It doesn't have to be sexual. It doesn't have to be in the confines or the context of a marriage. It doesn't even have to be with a human being. The spiritual renunciants, the monastics of the world, of every religious tradition throughout history, have experienced that connection with God, with the universe, sometimes in certain traditions. It's a very specific relationship with God. There's a beautiful, beautiful story of Mirabai in the Indian tradition, who married Lord Krishna as a young child. She had an image of Krishna, and she literally married Krishna as a young child, and that was it for her. So you even have it on that level. You have people for whom their friend circle fulfills all of that need for connection. I know lots and lots of people who are very, very happy single. They're not monastics. They're not mystics. They may not even necessarily be very religious or spiritual. But their life is very full with work, with hobbies, with whatever it is that they do, with their friends as well. People have it with their guru, sometimes in a body, sometimes not in a body. So there's an infinite number of ways to connect. People have it with their pet. People have it with nature. As I was saying the other night, I've had some of my most ecstatic moments of connection with trees. Enough. But we need connection of some sort. And so the decision not to partner should be as in almost every decision. I'm a big proponent in ensuring that you are moving toward something rather than moving away from it or pushing away from it. When we don't partner because we've been hurt, when we don't partner because we're afraid, when we don't partner because we don't want to be hurt again, that's something I would advise against. Because that's not moving toward something. That's pushing something away. And nothing beneficial in life comes from simply fear and pushing away. There has to be something that we are also moving toward. And there may be moments where what we're moving toward is emptiness. We're in a situation. We know it's wrong. We have no idea what's going to come instead. We move toward emptiness. But there has to be a consciousness in that moving toward emptiness. And so when we talk about decisions not to partner, we have to be aware of the need for connection. And it doesn't mean that you have to know now with whom will that connection be or with what will the connection be. But an awareness that it's not a choice not to connect, that the choice not to partner isn't about, I don't want to be hurt, I don't trust, I need to protect myself. If it's a choice simply to feel full, to fill ourselves in any one of the other hundreds of ways we can fill ourselves other than a husband or wife, fantastic. As I said, I know lots and lots and lots of people who are very, very fulfilled, not partners. But not because they're doing it out of fear. And so that would be something that I would really want to check in with. Because there's a big tendency when we've been hurt to just say, forget it. And the truth is, whether it's a romantic sexual partner, whether it's a friend, in order to connect, we have to trust. We have to open ourselves up. We have to be vulnerable, or you can't connect. If I'm guarded, there's nothing, you know, it's like if you take two pieces of Velcro and you stick tape or fabric or whatever you do on the, they won't stick together. They'll only stick together if nothing is on top of either of them. Then it works, then it sticks. And so the only way to connect is when you're open. When you're trusting, when you're able to be vulnerable. And if that connection takes the form with other humans, with God, with a guru, with a tree, wonderful. But just make sure that you have connection in your life. And make sure that the decision is not something that you're just running from. Because that'll never feel fulfilling. You'll have to keep running. And in order to feel full, I've got to stop for a minute. And if I'm constantly pushing something away, constantly fear of, I shouldn't get too close. I don't want to trust. Have to move on. This could become a partner. I don't want a partner. So if we're pushing away relationships because we've decided I don't want to be partnered, and I'm pushing away trusting, that's not going to be probably a very deeply fulfilling experience. But if you make a conscious decision to connect, but I'm going to connect through a spiritual practice, I'm going to connect through my work, I'm going to connect through art, whatever it is, just make sure that there is deep connection.
This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.